Prior to it, I had a high level of skepticism. I had a perhaps even, I will even go so far as to say a bit of annoyance, right? Yeah, I'm the high school librarian. So why would you need AI? Go to the library. All your problems are solved, right? So I was trying not to have that attitude, but yeah, I kind of went in with it.
From the MIT studios of the Teaching Systems Lab, this is Teach Lab, a podcast about the art and craft of teaching. I'm Justin Reich. If you're a teacher, hopefully you've got some good rest and did some fun stuff this summer. In the South and West, some folks have already headed back to school, and in most of the country, teachers are gearing up to head back. And that means some back-to-school professional development. My colleague Jesse Dukes visited a school district in the suburbs near New York City to talk about the research into generative AI that we've been doing at the Teaching Systems Lab and to observe their 2 days of professional development, all geared around helping their teachers adapt for the arrival of generative AI technologies in their schools. I invited Jesse onto the show to share what he observed and also give us some insight into what kind of guidance, training, and support teachers are getting regarding the arrival of generative AI across the country. Welcome back to the show, Jesse.
Thank you, Justin. It's good to be here. And yes, as you said, the school district in New York invited me to be a keynote speaker because of the research we're doing. They'd heard some of the episodes of Teach Lab. Also invited me to lead a kind of workshop in which some of the teachers participated in a process to revise some curriculum in the age of AI. But they also invited me to hang out, you know, and observe the other stuff they had going on for this 2 days they called Cyber Camp, which was all about AI, AI in the classroom, understanding how AI technology works, addressing different tools that are available. They had a student panel at one point, which was totally fascinating. So yeah, it was just a great opportunity to see what one school district is doing to try to prepare their teachers for the arrival of this technology.
Well, give us some of the highlights. What were some of the things that you saw that most struck you?
Okay, well, let me start with a little bit of audio. This was from my...
Ready to shake it off and find some tacos? Oh boy, let's get those tacos!
Scene 2, the oxygen crisis.
We don't have time for this. We need oxygen.
Gosh, maybe they can help us.
Follow us. We know where to find the oxygen.
Thanks, clown.
Do you have any idea what you're hearing? Does this make any sense to you?
It sounds like a play. I'm going to go ahead and guess that somehow you roped in a couple of teachers to act out a play that GPT wrote and seemed like some of the teachers were milking it for some laughs.
You got it. You nailed it. This is exactly what happened. I mean, this is, you know, you have told educators to embrace the weird when it comes to AI. And so I wanted to do a live demo of that. So after about 90 minutes of me talking about, you know, large language models and some of the observations we've made from teachers, we made a play up on the spot. I asked everybody in the room for a protagonist. They chose Iron Man. We made it Iron Person so that any of the actors could portray that role. We chose some helpers for Iron Person, so we got Mickey Mouse and Taylor Swift. We needed an antagonist, and they chose Kevin Guidotti, who is the director of technology at the school district and basically the person who put this professional development together. Really nice guy, and he obliged and performed as Kevin Guidotti, evil genius.
Evil Kevin Guidotti versus the
Iron
Person.
Told you, Iron Person, you'll never get these tacos.
We can do this together. Just take my hand.
So it was a lot of fun. Yeah, and
what was the takeaway? What did other than some laughs? What do you think the teachers got out of that?
I mean, I think that a lot of them didn't necessarily really even understand what was happening when you prompt Chat GPT or any AI with something. And so I think I saw a lot of nodding. The realization that what's happening with a lot of large language model AI is something like Google autocomplete, you know, happening over and over again. I could see some light bulbs going off. And I saw some excitement of teachers who were kind of excited to experiment more. In the afternoon, we did this workshop, and I invited the head of the high school English department, Dwayne Smith, to share a process in which he updated some curricula in the age of AI. And so Dwayne Smith is an English teacher. He teaches The Catcher in the Rye, as many English teachers do. And prior, you know, a few years ago, he would assign his students to go home and write some short answers to some pretty traditional, you know, prompts. Where is Holden when the story first opens up? Why is he there? You know, what does he mean when he calls his older brother DB a prostitute? Why does Holden worry about the ducks? You know, these are questions designed for the teacher, Dwayne Smith, to see are the students actually reading, but also to get them thinking a little bit about the literary themes and the literary craft. And, you know, ChatGPT will make mincemeat out of these questions. These are questions that are easy for ChatGPT to generate reasonable answers.
Many book reading help sites, many you know, Reddit threads, other kinds of things have discussed all these points extensively. ChatGPT has no trouble probabilistically generating text that would respond to these questions in a convincing range of ways.
Absolutely. And like even in the past, if you had used, you know, Spark Notes or Cliff Notes or something like that before, you could probably answer most of these questions. But even then, you'd have to think a little bit because these literal questions are not being responded to in the Spark Notes. But in this case, you can just type in the prompt and get a reasonable answer. So, you know, there's lots of strategies Dwayne Smith could have used. But what he did was experiment. He said he experimented over several weeks or months, and he came up with an assignment where students would type the following prompt into an AI bot of their choice, and which, by the way, almost all of them will choose ChatGPT. So the new assignment was to type this prompt in. You are an avid reader who enjoys having detailed discussions with students like me about the literature that they are studying. Ask me what I'm currently reading and wait for a response. Begin a conversation with me about the work of literature and try to make it a natural conversation. Remember, I'm a high school student. Please comment on my observations and ask follow-up questions to keep the conversation going. As often as possible, try to get me to provide you with specific textual references or quotes. At the end of the conversation, provide me with feedback that will help me get better at having literary conversations. So his students copy and paste that into, you know, Bing Copilot, ChatGPT, whatever they want, that they start a chat. They do the chat for like 5 minutes, maybe five or six back and forths, and then they print out the output of their chat, and that's what they hand in to their teacher, Dwayne Smith. So Dwayne presented this, you know, to all the teachers at this workshop, and then we basically went through a process where the teachers were prompted to go through a similar thought process. What's an old assignment that you like that might not work quite so well anymore in the age of AI? What do you like about it? What are the learning goals? How might you achieve the learning goals differently? Maybe leveraging AI or maybe just bypassing AI.
Now, have his students passed around a prompt amongst each other, which says something like, you are a student who is being forced to have a conversation with an AI bot. Please respond about Catcher in the Rye with detailed quotations answering the AI bot's questions to you.
No idea if they're doing that or not. It would be a pretty sophisticated con, right? you could train AI to be both sides of this conversation.
You've got one AI open in Chrome. You've got one open in Firefox. You're
having
copying
them talk,
and pasting
copying
the responses
and paste,
back
them talk
to each other.
All to avoid reading the dreaded Catcher in the Rye. You know, Dwayne Smith said it took him a while to develop this prompt. And one thing it does is role model an interesting use of generative AI, you know, having it ask questions rather than answer them. And, you know, in theory, it requires the students to still do the essential thinking. And he reports he's having good outcomes so far. But, you know, you never know, right? If students really want to bypass learning, you know, if there's a will to not learn, there's a way.
Students are inspiring.
Yeah, in this regard. So that was pretty fun. One of the most exciting and fascinating moments was a student panel of five or six students who they brought them into an auditorium. They had them sitting in chairs. All the teachers were there. And then a moderator asked a series of questions about how these students use AI. And I'm going to play you some audio from it. I wasn't able to get a very good recording of this, so it's kind of hard to hear. I'm gonna give you a few highlights of this. One thing I observed is that the teachers were just riveted by this. You know, the moderator would ask a question like, you know, how long have you been using AI? Or, do you use AI to work on homework assignments? And the teachers were just leaning forward with deep attentiveness.
I have a question. So when did you become aware of AI, and who taught you how to use it?
You know, there was one student who was particularly articulate, but most of them said, we know we're not supposed to use AI to complete assignments or cheat in bypassing learning, but we like to use it to polish our writing. We like to use it to check our work. We like to use it as sort of, one student described it as having a tutor over his shoulder, you know, helping him write something. And the teachers were really fascinated with this. There was a moment where one of the students said, well, we don't use it for assignments unless they're busy work. It was basically made a distinction between using it for an assignment that the student approved of versus an assignment which he had evaluated on his own and decided
was
busy. Well,
no more busy work, teachers. Got to put the busy work away and just pull out the really good assignments from now on, I guess.
One of the couple interesting moments from this, and one moment was, you know, this district, like many school districts, is in a procurement process to contract a purpose-built educational AI software suite. I'm not sure they'd want me to say exactly which one they're procuring.
But there are a whole bunch of companies out there, right, which basically make a series of large language models available. They deal with the data in such a way that it doesn't get back to be used to train with those things. It's got some COPPA protection, it's integrated with Clever, so it has a single sign-in that schools are already using, other kinds of things like that. It's trying to get you access to the models without all the things that we don't like about direct consumer technologies.
And specifically more rigorous filters around age and appropriate content, more surveillance. So if the student is using, you know, the school provided purpose-built AI to cheat, that will be a little bit more obvious to the teachers. It will even use AI to summarize what they're doing. So if they're sort of goofing off with a chatbot, the teachers will get a little notification in some cases. Hey, student X appears to be just goofing off rather than taking the assignment seriously. And they can, the teacher can then intervene. And so they asked all the students, like, if we start, you know, making this AI available rather than blocking it at the server level, which is what the school does, and which, by the way, all the students know how to get around using VPN or their phones or something like that. If we start making this technology available to use, will you use it in the classroom? And they were all like, yeah, if you make us, but we really don't want to. And at one point, they went down the line of all the students, and it's like, what's your favorite AI tool to use? And they all just said, ChatGPT, ChatGPT, ChatGPT. And they were like, well, why wouldn't you want to use the purpose-built school AI that we're thinking about providing for you, that your school provides you? And at one point, this one student just said, schools have way too many restrictions.
Good for you.
And that got a big laugh, because probably many of the teachers in the room agree with that student that schools have way too many restrictions. But
many of those teachers would, you know, if they were given a school-based tool, would use their consumer ChatGPT account.
Very, very, very possibly. Very, very possibly. But, after the laugh died down, the student basically explained that all of those filters and all of those purpose-built chatbots and different, you know, modules designed to give students use of the model with guardrails, they just restrict the power of the AI tool. And the students know this intuitively. They've already developed an intuition around this. And, so it's not to say that if you're a teacher and you use something like Google Classroom's AI plugin tools or Magic School or School AI in the classroom, you know, your students will probably use it. But I wouldn't necessarily expect that that's what they're going to use when they go home, you know, particularly if they have access to ChatGPT. I think one other just observation I would have from this, too, is that these students were great, you know, and they were very, very thoughtful about how they felt like they could use AI in support of their learning. They seemed to have an understanding of, okay, using it to do the whole assignment would not only be cheating and dishonest, but I wouldn't learn anything, but maybe using it to check my grammar or using it for suggestions before I start my assignment might be a way to enhance my learning process. But the students were well informed about AI, but there was also a lot of technological enthusiasm and optimism. And maybe, giving the AI a little more credit, in my opinion, than it deserves.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the great things about talking to students is that if you promise students that you will take their ideas seriously, they will give you their best thinking, and it will challenge your thinking as educators in different kinds of ways. And of course, just like technologists and education researchers and policymakers don't agree about what the future of AI looks like, it's no surprise that students have a range of predictions and beliefs and hopes and fears and dreams too.
Yeah, exactly. It was just as fascinating for me to observe what the students had to say, and, you know, familiar because I've interviewed some students. It was just as fascinating to watch the teachers. I feel like I could see the gears spinning in their heads as they were reckoning with, oh, these students know a lot more about these tools than I do, and I need to catch up. You know, that was a sort of common thought. But yeah, then in the course of 2 days, there were a number of breakout workshops. There was one in which teachers got in small groups and talked about different classroom activities or goals, and then got advice about what purpose-built AI-powered tool might work well for that particular goal or that particular activity.
Yeah.
I do a composition project with my third graders where they have to create a like piece of music using Chrome Music Lab that's based on a constellation, and then they have to take that constellation and then compose like an underscore for them to tell the myth of that constellation. So I always struggle because some of them are like kind of in terms of like what the story is, like, you know, we kill the Minotaur or whatever. So I'm interested in using like Diffit to try and maybe like make the myths like maybe more appropriate, right, for third grade to use.
Have you ever used Diffit before?
No.
You're gonna find it crazy easy to use. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna love it. Yeah. And by the way, Gemini will do that too. And you can upload documents. Right,
there were workshops that included, you know, AI detection strategies, curriculum development strategies, how to use AI to support research. There was a workshop I participated in that was really more about preparing them to help their department or their particular school. So some of them might be participating in writing departmental policies or school-wide policies. And so they had a workshop around that. And there was a moment in that I want to play for you, just a moment of an observation one teacher made. They were talking about AI detection. They were talking about whether AI detectors are reliable. And this was a moment that I thought was particularly interesting.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is the whole bias thing. Like, you know, if this goes back to like when we used to grade ELAs, like how many times did we grade state any type of test? And if the kid's handwriting was perfectly beautifully neat,
right,
you assumed, oh,
it's
this
gonna
is
be
good,
an amazing
this
response.
Is gonna be
this
an
is gonna
am-
be a three,
this is
a
four.
A four.
You know, and then you start to read and you're like, what, this is wow, or vice versa.
Yeah,
like writing
son,
was
the
horrible. And you're also motivated, oh, this you she wrote. You think the pretty handwriting is a female or whatever. And I feel like the same thing happens with teacher bias. You're assuming whether it's a socioeconomic thing or the, you know, what the kid looks like, you know, or the way the kid speaks, maybe that, well, I mean, you know, that's gonna happen. They might not generate, well, you don't normally write like that, but I know a lot of kids who might not present themselves as an academic, but are pretty good writers. And vice versa, you can have a kid, like that boy that was speaking was so amazing in the way he presented himself. But I can see looking at this kid and being like, oh, I'm never going to use that AI detector on him because listen to him, he's brilliant. But am I going to do that to another kid? Because of
just slacking on everything.
Right, but maybe didn't at that point, at that time, or use, you know, so I think that's what worries me about that is that it. We're already assuming by how they look, by they speak, by, you know, things like that. So I don't know. It's worrisome.
The thing that
well, it's so great to hear educators thinking about this so carefully. I guess a thing that it makes me think about in particular is just the contingency of a decision to decide to investigate something like this. So because there's not some standard check of every assignment for malfeasance, which means that a teacher is making this idiosyncratic choice every time an essay passes in front of, you know, and they've got 120 students, they've got 200 students, they've got 70 students, every, you know, like that month's essays, that week's essays are passing in front of you one after another, you know, four, four, five, five, four, four, five, five. Oh, this this one. There's something, you know, there's something wrong with this one, and recognizing that there's just so much discretion in that decision to decide to invest time in investigating and so forth, and realizing, man, if we're not really careful, we're not going to be fair about how we choose to do that. And, you know, conceivably that was always a problem. But, you know, then on the other side, on the other end of things, you know, there's just no ground truth for these investigations. Right. So you could at least say, well, you know, when we knew kids were copying stuff that they found on Google, we could at least find where they had copied it from and show them that the sentence is the same and be like, all right, this was pretty much it. But, you know, not only are we using this kind of discretion to decide when to investigate, but, you know, we're sort of acting as the judge and jury ourselves, too. And so it's great to have teachers recognize you probably can't do nothing. You know, if students have a sense that their teachers are doing nothing to investigate whether or not they're using AI to bypass work, then you're going to have too many students who are doing that. But there, it does seem like doing something is really tricky.
It is just great that teachers had time to talk together about these things and share their concerns. You know, it seemed to me that this particular teacher, you know, she had seen examples of these kinds of biases playing out, you know, in her life and in her career before, and maybe more so than some of the other teachers. And so that she was just able to be in a room and share those concerns, and everybody can kind of digest it together and work out on policies together. I just think it's really, really, really valuable. I want to play a little more tape. This is a librarian at the high school, Leticia Nardone. She goes by Letty. And after this workshop, I asked her to kind of compare her attitude towards generative AI in schools going in and then after the 2 days of training. So this is the before.
Prior to it, I had a high level of skepticism. I had perhaps even, I will even go so far as to say, a bit of annoyance, right? Yeah. I'm the high school librarian. So why would you need AI? Go to the library. All your problems are solved, right? So I was trying not to have that attitude, but yeah, I kind of went in with it.
And then she talks a little bit about the different workshops and, you know, my keynote, plus some of the things that she attended. And then this is where she sort of says she got to.
So I'm much more, dare I say the word, welcoming to AI. Yeah, actually, I do. Because it can serve an entirely different purpose. And I have to say, it was the student panel. I hadn't realized to the extent that this was a thing. They were already using it. They were using it in ways that I thought was rather, this is going to be my 19th year here. So I've seen a lot and I really enjoy working with these kids. They do have a thirst and a hunger for knowledge. They really do. At their core, they do. And they're not looking at this as an easy way out. They're adding it to a toolkit. I really do. I think that that's how they're using it at this point, a toolkit.
Well, that would not be the first time in the history of American education where when teachers listen seriously to young people, their ideas are challenged, they're inspired, they see a new direction forward because of the thinking that young people offered. Man, if you wanted better advertisement for, you know, grab a bunch of students, you know, ideally some really different ones, ones with different perspectives, ones that are thriving in schools, ones that are struggling in school, you know, ones that come at it from different ways, and just let them talk about their experiences. And gosh, there's probably nothing that schools could do better. Maybe it's that and having someone with some technical expertise who could be one of the students explain some of the fundamentals of how these systems work and how they predict words one after another.
And actually, that was a kind of critique that many shared, including the people who put that student panel together, that these were mostly pretty academically successful students. And they did say it would be really interesting to hear from students who have, you know, succumbed to the temptation of using AI dishonestly to complete an assignment. Of course, that's hard. It's harder to get, right? You're going to go up in front of 100 teachers and talk about the time that you violated the academic rules. Most kids aren't going to want to do that. But there was some awareness that having a more diverse array of students would have been helpful. But that general trajectory that Letty lays out, I went into this, I didn't know, you know, low information, annoyance, maybe anxiety around AI.
Threatening her identity. I mean, I love, you know, the library's got everything you need. Why do we need something else? Well, we've got the whole library.
Right.
You know, just a really common reaction, especially from librarians who, of course, you know, give them a few years with anything and they figure out how to weave it into their practice and mission.
Yeah. And now, you know, and she is now excited to do that. And she's thinking about how she's going to do it. And, you know, she's aware. She and I talked for a while about AI. ChatGPT is not necessarily a very good research tool. It can be useful in certain parts of the research process, but it routinely spits out wrong information and it routinely doesn't cite its own sources very accurately.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even really a search, right? It's just another sort of
right.
probabilistic generation.
It's just a probabilistic generation based on bajillion bytes of data. But this general trajectory, I think, was very common. I think most of the teachers had some version of this trajectory. AI was a problem. It was annoying. Maybe some of them were experimenting with it. Some of them were curious, but they were low information. And after 2 days of learning, of talking with students, of talking to each other, most of them seemed to reach this point of, I'm excited to experiment with this tool. And I also have a better sense about how to manage the downsides of AI in class too. And they're more confident that they can effectively do that. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, well, Justin, there is a part of this that I think is a bit of a downer. So the district that I visited in New York, I looked them up and they're very well resourced. They have a lot of funding. The amount they spend per student is in the top 5% in the state. Something like fewer than 10% of their students qualify for free or reduced lunch. You know, so they, you know, they have more resources than other districts to offer this kind of training and professional development.
Well, regardless of the level of resources that they have, it's rare for any district to offer 2 days of training around a particular technology. So you can tell they're very committed to professional learning for their teachers.
Yeah, and this is my point. It's a great district. I really enjoyed spending time there. It's a great group of educators.
Oh, you can hear it. The librarian comes in and said, I've been here for 19 years. I love these kids. These kids have a real thirst for knowledge. Committed. I mean, just the little snippets you get, you know, oh man, I'm really worried about the bias in the district. But I bet you had hundreds of these little interactions to choose from where you go, oh man, this is a great group of educators.
I totally felt that way. And it's great. And you're going to find great groups of educators in other school districts. I don't know how many of them are getting 2 days of AI professional development this summer. In fact, I think
not a lot.
I think it's not a lot. And in fact, we're going to try to actually put our finger on just how much of this kind of professional development is happening across the board. I want to play some tape from some of the other teachers that we have been speaking to as part of this research. This might take like 4 or 5 minutes, so I apologize for that. If you want to pause at any point and reflect, we can do it, or we can kind of reflect at the end. But I just want to play you some snippets of some of the teachers that we've interviewed. And we've asked them the question about how much guidance, support, and professional development they're getting from their school or district. So here are some answers. This is a biology teacher in Chicago.
What support or guidance in terms of policies have you gotten from the school or district around AI this year?
So I don't think Chicago Public Schools has given us any guidance that I'm aware of. I'm part of a plagiarism committee at our school that's reworking our plagiarism guidelines to include AI and to be more in line with what we'd like to see, and that even includes some of the explanations that when you copy, you steal your chance for an education. And the idea is to eventually turn it into, we have the staff-facing document mostly complete, and then we want to turn it into a student-facing document so that we could spend some time next year going over it and explaining that AI is a great tool, because we also don't want to shut the door on this completely, because I feel like there is some value here, but just like anything, I want to trust you to be responsible with this tool.
One observation I have is there's such a double-edged sword of, you know, the decentralization of American schools, because you would think like, well, Chicago's got a lot of administrators. I don't know how many administrators they have, but they probably have a good number of administrators. And they haven't sent something around to everyone that says, you know, like, here's what you could learn. Here's how to learn more. Here are some things to read. Here are some basics. Here's some online videos. Here's a workshop they're offering. I mean, maybe Chicago's doing something, you know, as the school year gets ready to kick off. But it seems like a topic for which really big districts should have the resources to be able to respond and provide something. I mean, in some ways, it's wonderful that this plagiarism committee with this one teacher in it is able to respond to the particular needs of their students, and they know the kinds of things that work and don't and all those sorts of things. But it is a little bit crazy that, like, how is this school in Chicago figuring out how to deal with AI? Well, like, we happen to have a plagiarism committee, so I guess that's the group that's going to provide some student guidance on it. Like, you know, it's sort of a, you want some degree of idiosyncrasy and kind of tailoring to local context, but that seems like a little bit too far on the, well, I guess that guy's gonna make it up.
And these teachers are just like Googling, do AI detectors work? You know,
yeah.
Like that's on their weekends, you know, and they're not getting paid for participating. And I should say, the school district I visited in New York, those teachers were getting compensated to be there. But I don't think this teacher that I just played for you is getting any kind of payment or credit for being on the plagiarism committee. All right, so since you mentioned really big districts, I'm going to skip ahead to another example. You might remember Maria Nakis, a teacher we've spoken to in other contexts before. She is teaching math in high school at LA Unified. And same question to her.
The only professional development we've had at this point was a brief kind of PD meeting, and then for the students, a presentation on the use of AI, but more in terms of for manipulating photos and and kind of the dangers that that can create. So more around the socio-emotional piece.
Like I was hearing somebody talking about putting your peers' heads on other images that would be embarrassing, or like that kind of thing.
Correct. Or sexually explicit in nature.
Right.
Which are incidents that have occurred both outside the district and in the district, in Los Angeles and the surrounding areas. So it's been more around, I think, that than the academic piece.
I mean, it's certainly tragic to hear Maria talk about these terrible experiences that young people are having. I mean, it does speak again as to why some degree of local attention to these issues is important. You know, if schools are not yet being racked by deepfake pornography, you probably don't want to have a whole, you know, professional development or student engagement around the topic. Like, in particular, you don't want to give anybody any ideas. But certainly, you know, that is probably much more important to deal with than cheating or plagiarism, or
certainly more urgent, right? Like you know, it's the first problem you would need to address, right? The student's safety.
But ideally, what we would have is, you know, groups of experts, you know, across the country, strategically placed in states, that are coming up with some sort of core share ideas about how to deal with these things that are pretty well vetted, and let people adapt them in their own local contexts.
So this is from a science teacher in Oregon. Our friend and colleague Chris Bagg talked with him.
Has the school helped in any way in terms of like giving you or your colleagues guidance on how to adapt some of these assignments in the age of AI, or has it been left completely up to you?
Not the school itself. The principal or anybody in the school has not. District-wide, the technology department did put out some workshops that are voluntary for teachers to attend on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And in one of those, they talked about AI tools, not as a way to redo assignments, but to just, here's what you could use if you're like wanting to make a presentation and you want to make it faster.
So, you know, voluntary workshop on a Saturday while school's in session during the busy season, probably unpaid, versus 2 days of professional development in the summer, a month after the end of school, that you get paid to attend.
Yeah. And obviously props to both sets of instructional technology teams. Like, it's great that they're, you know, the yep. person who from the IT group who's going in on Saturday probably isn't getting paid either.
Right. And it's not their fault that they can't pay, you know, the teachers to attend.
Yeah. But these are, you know, big changes and big challenges. And it really speaks to having the resources available to schools so that they can pay folks to figure out how to deal with these challenges. Hearing them all in sequence is just a good reminder that teachers need a lot of help, and that as a whole system, we're going to have to figure out how to provide better resources for teachers to understand these technologies, to understand the risks of cheating in particular. That just seems to be in so many of the conversations that you and our colleagues are having with folks. Like, that's just a starting point for so many folks. Like, how do we make sure that students aren't using this in the wrong way? And then how can we figure out some ways of using it in our own practice?
Yeah. And, you know, I just think that after spending 2 days at that district in New York, I feel like if I had kids in that district, I would feel very optimistic about the capacity of my kids' teachers to adapt to generative AI in schools. I'd be like, okay, they've got this. They're going to figure it out. But I think that many, many, many more schools and districts fall into the category of these teachers that I've just played for you, where they're not doing any professional development, or they're doing a little bit on the weekends, or what guidance and PD they're able to offer is around how to avoid deepfake pornography or privacy issues or safety issues, which are important, right? But they haven't gotten to the point of thinking about the pedagogical issues yet. And actually, we are curious because, you know, the research I've done up to this point has been pretty anecdotal. So as you know, Justin, we're actually partnering with the RAND Corporation. They have their big panel of educators where they're going to survey, I think, tens of thousands of teachers this fall. And we actually have some questions we're going to put into that survey about how much guidance and professional development teachers are getting from their schools and districts, and how useful the teachers feel that guidance and professional development is up to this point.
That'll be great. Looking forward to learning more.
Well, to sort of wrap it up, Justin, I wanted to play two more bits of interview audio for you. And I want to play both of them for you, and then I'm going to ask you to kind of reflect on the two of them together.
All right.
The first one we're going to hear from is Letty, the librarian we heard from earlier. I asked her, you know, what would it be like if she hadn't had the opportunity to participate in CyberCamp in this professional development? And then you'll hear her sort of move on from there to thinking about how she might integrate AI into her own work as a librarian. Can you just imagine where you and your colleagues might be if you had not had that time?
It would have been awful. Quite frankly, it's unimaginable. There really isn't an instance where I could think that some sort of new technology has arrived, and the teachers wouldn't be supported by it. It's inconceivable.
It's terrific to hear that. And If I may strain your imagination for a moment, I mean, what would it be like to imagine going into the next school year without that training or support?
You'd be relegated to teaching or advising or guiding students with the knowledge that you have, right? And knowing full well that the student might dismiss your thinking, or they're coming in with the latest Apple, whatever. You know, our kids are very technology oriented. They come in with the wonderful technology, and I think my fear there is that they don't come in for extra help. They don't come in and seek your assistance, because they figure, well, you know, she doesn't know. The teacher doesn't know. You know, they'll size you up pretty quickly and they'll go, she doesn't know or he doesn't know. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll figure it out.
Okay, hold any thoughts for now. Make a note if you need to. So this is from a teacher we're calling Ryan, an English teacher in a large urban district in the West. And Ryan has not gotten any guidance or professional development, or very little to speak of, and certainly nothing related to pedagogy.
You asked me if I had a good year. I went backwards in technology for the first time in almost 10 years of teaching. Every year it was, how can I be more paperless? How can I be more, everything is on the computer? How can I be more? I do feel like I went to marble composition notebooks 100% across the board.
This school year.
Every kid filled up between one and two marble composition notebooks with writing notes and other academic discourse, reflections, journal entries, diary entries, creative writing, academic writing. And it was the, in terms of like discourse in my classes, it was the best school year I've ever had. Because I went backwards with technology, not forwards.
Okay, Justin. So Letty is saying we have to embrace and explore this technology because the students are using it and we need to meet them where they are. And we're not even credible to them if we don't understand how they're using AI. And Ryan is saying, not only am I not going to use AI, I'm not even going to use computers anymore, man. Like, I'm going back to notebooks. The hell with all of this. So
we're going back to the 40s.
We're going back to the 40s. So who's right, Letty or Ryan?
Yeah. I often say it's not about getting one right system. It's about getting one system right. So both can be great answers. There are going to be schools out there that have the experience that Ryan have where they say, we just, the best way to spend our time together is to be totally focused on each other's thinking and not what bots or the web is thinking. And so let's turn all that stuff off. And there'll be other folks who say, man, the way we got to get our kids engaged is by really immersing them in the technologies that are available and playing around with them. You could imagine that in a really rich school system over the course of 12 years, you'd probably want students to experience some of both of that too. That might be great, is if there were some classes that were more like Ryan's and there are some classes that are like the aspiration. So, I mean, that's what's so hard about this work, is that there's not a correct answer to those questions, you know, but there probably is more than ever the opportunity to be really intentional. You know, what I like about what both of them, you know, the thing that they both have in common is that they have some real intention that they're thinking about towards this. You know, I do think, given the general thrust towards technology in schools over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, I think there seems to be a bunch of evidence percolating in various places that were due for a bit of a correction. You know, the schools that are having some really good outcomes from having kids keep their phones in magnet locked pouches all day. Ryan going back to composition notebooks. And you know, I think the thing that he says is really important is that what they're getting back is discourse. What they're getting back is talking to one another. Now, you know, if you just teach kids discourse and you don't teach them how to navigate a technology rich information landscape, you probably haven't done everything that you want to do as a school system. But man, it's tough question. You know, we've talked in a number of recent Teach Lab episodes about just how incredibly important it is to give teachers the opportunity to understand some basic fundamentals about how GPTs, how generative pre-trained transformers work, because that builds confidence, that builds understanding, that gives people a stronger access point. It seems like we really need to add from that. And, you know, right after you do that, the second thing you need to do is find some students and really listen to them and figure out where they're at and what they're thinking and how they're using the technology and what their challenges are and so forth. And that's probably a pretty logical second place to go. But I also just continue to feel an immense amount of gratitude to the folks who invited you and let you in and let you see what they're doing, talk to you, you know, the teachers that share their insights with us for our research, for the conversations that we're trying to have. We just remain enormously grateful for their wisdom, their insights, their vulnerability, all that stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, it continues. We're still talking to teachers. We're still talking to students. So if you hear this and you feel like you have something to say, or you're like, oh, they need to talk to this person, we actually have a survey at tsl.mit.edu/AI. You can fill out that survey and leave contact information for us to follow up with. We have found some fascinating interviews for people who have come, filled out that survey, left their email address. So please do that if you want to be part of the conversation.
Jesse, thanks for coming back to Teach Lab, and thanks for bringing all these terrific voices with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Justin Reich. Thanks for listening to Teach Lab. Thanks to the Spencer Foundation and the Social and Ethical Responsibilities of Computing Initiative at MIT for funding our research into the arrival of generative AI in schools. This episode was produced by Jesse Dukes. We had research help from Chris Bagg, Natasha Estevez, and Andrew Merriweather. If you want to take our survey or learn more about our research into generative AI in K-12 education, you can head over to tsl.mit.edu/AI. That's tsl.mit.edu/AI. Stay safe. Until next time. Thank you.